Amen. 1 Samuel 13. All right, so take your Bibles and also your Constitution. No, I will be quoting something from the Constitution here in a moment, but I want to emphasize that it's the Bible we focus on to get our understanding of these things, and then this just protects, supposedly, hopefully, continues to protect what is given to us in the Word of God. Now, 1 Samuel chapter 13, I want you to notice verse 19 through 23. Samuel 13, verse 19. All right, so this is the context of King Saul here. There was no smith found throughout all the land of Israel, for the Philistines said, lest the Hebrews make them swords or spears. But all the Israelites went down to the Philistines to sharpen every man his share, and his coulter, and his axe, and his mattock. Yet they had a file for the mattocks, and for the coulters, and for the forks, and for the axes, and to sharpen the goads. So at least you could sharpen your goad. You couldn't have a spear, but you know you could have your ox goad. So it came to pass in the day of battle that there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of the people that were with Saul and Jonathan, but with Saul and with Jonathan, his son, was there found. The garrison of the Philistines went out to the passage of Michmash. Also notice me Judges chapter 5. Judges chapter 5. So I want you to see there that an enemy, a tyrannical government, had taken their weapons from them so that they had no self-defense as a nation. Also, Judges chapter 5, we see something related to this, verses 6 through 8. I was reminded of this as I was looking at some passages. This passage came to my mind. This is actually Deborah and Barak's praise after God had given them victory over their enemies. Notice it says here in verse 6, as they're singing this, it says, in the days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were unoccupied, and the travelers walked through byways. Why is that? Because it was not safe to go down the highway. Now, it's pretty bad when in a country you can't travel down your own highways because of safety matters. The inhabitants of the villages ceased, and they ceased in Israel until that I, Deborah, arose, that I arose a mother in Israel. Now, it's a pretty sad day in a nation when a woman rises up to defend the nation. I'm not speaking against women, but where are the men who are standing up to take a stand in these things? It says in verse 8, they chose new gods. Notice then was war in the gates. Notice this question here. Was there a shield or spear seen among 40,000 in Israel? Literally, the enemy had disarmed them. Now, I was doing some reading, and I forgot I had this article saved, and so I printed it off. Firearms refresher course. Number one, an armed man is a citizen, an unarmed man is a subject. Number two, this is a firearms refresher course. Number two, a gun in the hand is better than a cop on the phone. Number three, Colt, the original point-and-click interface. Number four, gun control is not about guns, it's about control. Number five, if guns are outlawed, can we use swords? Number six, if guns cause crime, then pencils cause misspelled words. Number seven, free men do not ask permission to bear arms. Amen. Number eight, if you don't know your rights, you don't have any. Number nine, those who trade liberty for security have neither. Right. Number 10, the United States Constitution, copyright 1791, all rights reserved. I love that one there. Number 11, what part of shall not be infringed do you not understand? Number 12, the Second Amendment is in place in case the politicians ignore the others. Number 13, 64,999,987 firearms owners killed no one yesterday. Number 14, guns only have two enemies, rust and politicians. Number 15, now you have to catch this, no, K-N-O-W, guns, no peace, no safety. No, N-O, guns, no peace, no safety. Number 16, you don't shoot to kill, you shoot to stay alive. Number 17, 911, government-sponsored dial-a-prayer. Number 18, assault is a behavior, not a device. You know, they keep talking about outlawing assault weapons. Assault is a behavior, not a device. Number 19, criminals love gun control. It makes their job safer. Number 20, if guns cause crime, then matches cause arson. Number 21, only a government that is afraid of its citizens tries to control them. 22, you only have the rights you're willing to fight for. Number 23, Enforce the gun controls we already have, don't make more. 24, when you remove the people's right to bear arms, you create slaves. Last of all, number 25, the American Revolution would never have happened with gun control. Come to think of it, the American Revolution started with the British attempt at gun control. And here's this quote from supposedly attributed, at least, to Thomas Jefferson: those who hammer their guns into plows will plow for those who do not. A refresher course. Now, this morning we looked at persecution, and we see that no one defended themselves. This afternoon, I want to look at the balance of this and the biblical right to bear arms. In fact, some of this information that I was able to pull off of this comes from a website, biblicalselfdefense.com. In particular, there was an article. It's called The Biblical View of Self-Defense. Now, we looked at two passages, one in Judges 5 and one in 1 Samuel 13. As I emphasized, a tyrannical governmental power, the Philistines and also the Canaanites, Judges 5 were the Canaanites, disarmed the people of Israel. I want you to consider when the disarming took place, they were able to control the nation of Israel. They were able to control the people. Now, the big argument today is in relation to mass shootings. Because of mass shootings, we need more gun control. We need to take people's guns. Well, I came across an article. In fact, the stats from this come from Gun Violence Archive. And this is how they define a mass shooting. Four or more people shot in a particular instance, not including the shooters. So a mass shooting, when we think about the definition of it, they're talking about four or more people who are shot in a mass shooting. All right, so in many cases, these are false flag events to give reasons for a tyrannical government to remove biblical and constitutional rights of self-defense. Now, there was an article that I saved some information on this from Zero Hedge, November 24, 2022. It was by a man named Tyler Durden. And it was entitled, Four Mass Shooting Truths to Shut Down Your Liberal Family Members at Thanksgiving Dinner. So it just kind of grabbed my attention, so I saved it for the reasons that are listed in there. He gives four reasons why mass shooting truths are not truths, that they're false flag situations. First of all, the AR-15 is not a mass shooter's weapon of choice. That's even according to ABC News, Newsweek, and New York Times. So if they're saying this, then obviously AR-15s. So why is this big focus on AR-15s in our culture? Second of all, most mass shooters aren't angry white MAGA dudes, as he words it. Most are not angry white MAGA followers. Most are committed by black men. Most of the mass shooters are committed by black men. The media is selective in its reporting of this because it does not fit their propaganda narrative. That's very important for us to take notice of. Most of these mass shootings are not by angry white men. Most of them are, and I'll give you more details on this, most of them are committed by angry black men. Number three, fudging the numbers. In 2020, there were 611 mass shootings. In 2021, 690 mass shooting deaths. It was about that same in November 2022 as far as this article is concerned. So 600 to 700. Most are drive-by, drug-related, gang-related shootings. Did you hear what I just said? Most of these are drive-by, drug-related, gang-related shootings, but they don't tell us that. Again, there's selective reporting so that they can fulfill their propaganda narrative. Selective reporting, 45 mass shootings in Chicago in 2021 were not mentioned. Okay, so follow the numbers. Be honest with your numbers. You know, statistics can lie. Oh, they can be true, but they can be lie when you twist them the way you want them. Number four, the fourth statement about this, mass shootings are a tiny proportion of gun murders. Again, from Gun Violence Archive, as of November 2022, there were 15,608 people murdered with guns. Defensive and unintentional shootings were not included in that number. Out of that 15,608 people murdered with guns, only 554, obviously that's too many, but only 545, I should say, were killed in mass shootings. And again, that's with four more per killing. The problem is not guns. When you're talking about 3.5%, basically, of people, all people murdered, only 545, only 3.5% are killed in mass shootings. The problem is not the mass shootings. The problem is a wicked culture that is full of people with a seared conscience. Guns do not kill. People using a gun kill. Then an interesting stat was added to this article. More than 500 Americans are hit by lightning each year. We're going to outlaw lightning? It's like, so we have to keep this in perspective. Now, the reality is this. Globalists are in control of our government. We have to catch, I don't care who's Republican or Democrat, whoever's in the White House, globalists are in control of our government. They want Americans unarmed. So then you think about history. Hitler, Stalin, Chairman Mao, and others. History reveals that did not turn out well. That did not turn out well for the people. Also, the reality is this. Banning guns does not reduce crime. It only increases in nations turning in their weapons. I think of the example of Canada and Australia. Those are two of the recent ones that I've remembered. They started this massive campaign of turning in weapons. And as the weapons are turned in, as the weapons are given up, guess what? The crime rate keeps going up. Again, the criminal thinks, oh, yeah, my job is safer now. I don't have to worry about somebody shooting me when I'm committing my crime. Also, the Second Amendment is about citizens protecting themselves. Let me read for you the Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, I want you to notice here the emphasis of that. It's for when a government does not protect. Second of all, it also is used to oppose national tyranny. I want you to consider anarchy is not in that. We have to remember, we're not talking about anarchy. We're talking about people being armed to defend themselves when a tyrannical power comes into the White House and so on. Now, I thought about this as far as David's slingshot. That was not a boy's toy. David's slingshot was able to kill a lion and a bear and also a 10-foot giant. We're not talking about bling, shooting little peas or whatever. We're talking about something that probably shot a pool ball-sized stone. A pebble is not going to kill a 10-foot giant. No, this thing hit him square in the forehead. Can you imagine? Whoa! Can you imagine a pool ball-sized stone hitting you in the middle of your forehead? It says that he went, boom, fall flat on his face, and David finished it off using Goliath's sword, I should say, to take off his head. And then he carried it around with him for hours. what I think is interesting, too, as I was looking at, I think it was the same article I got that refresher course from. They had this photo on there. It shows these boys standing in a school classroom holding a gun in the 1950s. You could tell it was a 1950s photo. And they're getting gun training in the public school classroom. They used to do that here in America. Our high school in Abilene, Texas, I attended there 1981 to 1983. Well, we had guys called, nicknamed the Ropers. You know, they're ranchers and stuff. You know, they come in their four-wheel drive trucks and everything. And I remember very clearly, in the back windows of these trucks, you had a gun rack mounted. And you could see in the back window of these trucks the guns on the gun rack. They traveled in the school parking lot and everything with those guns. They didn't hide them in the glove box. They didn't hide them under the seat. They were visible in the back window of these trucks. We had no mass shootings at our school. You didn't have those things. Who knows who had a gun? I'm convinced that the thing to solve the school shooting problems is, if they did not know which teacher had a gun in their desk drawer, they would not be just marching it and shooting in a school. John Adams is quoted as saying this, "Arms in the hands of citizens may be used at individual discretion for the defense of the country, the overthrow of tyranny, or private self-defense." Notice to me Exodus 22. This is a very important passage related to this. And I want for us to notice carefully what it says. I want for us to set aside this idea that, first of all, the Second Amendment means I can kill anyone I want to in self-defense. Set aside that thinking. That's not what it says. Exodus 22, verse 1. If a man shall steal an ox or a sheep and kill it or sell it, he shall restore five oxen for an ox, four sheep for a sheep. All right, so this is the section of the law, Old Testament law, talking about restitution. Now, verse 2 through 4 is what I want you to focus in on. If a thief be found breaking up, or we could say breaking up to break in, we can add that statement to give us clarification what it's talking about here, be smitten that he die, there shall no blood be shed for him. So in other words, all right, so he dies while he's trying to break in because of self-defense. Notice the owner of that house, who ends up killing him, is not going to have any blood shed for him. There's no other way you can read that. Notice it says, if a thief be found breaking up and he be smitten, that he die. So the thief dies. So whose blood is being shed? Obviously, so this St. Louis thing, that irritates me. Things like that, where that couple had guns out to protect their property, protect themselves from thugs forcing their way in. They're in trouble with the law, not the thugs that are trying to force their way into that property. That is wrong. That is wrong. That is wrong. That is wickedness that our government is tolerating and even protecting in our courts. Notice it says, there shall no blood be shed for him. So when a storekeeper pulls out a gun that he has underneath his counter and shoots somebody who's trying to kill in his store, he's not the one who's at fault. But yet our government, our courts and all that, in many cases, try to pin the, probably in most cases because it's a black man. I am not prejudiced. If a white man does that just as much as a black man, if they're shot in the midst of a crime that they're committing, they died committing a crime. The one who shot them is not at fault according to the law. Verse 3. Now here's the catch though. If the sun be risen upon him, there shall be blood shed for him. For he should make full restitution. If he have nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. Notice that if the sun be risen upon him, all right, so he's detained until morning. So here's got the shotgun, in that case probably the sword in Bible times. They got their sword and they've got him tied up in a chair and they're waiting for the authorities to come. And the sun rises. So here's the scenario. If the sun be risen upon him, there shall be blood shed for him, for he should make full restitution. Who's he talking about as far as the bloodshed? In other words, if the sun rises, this is the way I read this verse here. If the sun rises and I kill him because he's come into my house, then I'm guilty of murder. I want you to read this carefully. There shall be blood shed for him, because we're not talking about the thief here, because notice he's going to make full restitution. If he have nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. So notice there's a financial penalty. And this is what I think is interesting too. There were no prisons in the Old Testament. Nobody sat on death row the rest of their life, dying of old age. Notice, he shall be sold for his theft. Why? Because this is a passage on restitution. If the theft be certainly found in his hand alive, whether it be ox or ass or sheep, he shall restore double. So even notice, even if they are able to get the ox, ass, or sheep back, notice he still has to restore double because he tried to steal. Now, again, I want you to notice here, this does not permit somebody performing a vigilante killing later. In fact, what I think is interesting, an example, just mentioned this, 1 Samuel 24. Remember David's followers said, hey, this is your opportunity. Yeah. No, it's not. David did not take the law into his own hands to kill King Saul, who had been out after him. It was very interesting. David fled from Saul. He did not take matters into his own hands to kill King Saul. In fact, twice on one occasion, he had a spear thrown at him. And also one other time, he had a spear thrown at him and he fled. He fled for his life. That is an option. So again, we have to get past this idea. Well, if they're breaking in, I have a right to kill them. Not necessarily. No, you're protecting. You're not on purpose trying to take matters in your own hands. Deadly force is not always necessary. That's what I want to emphasize from that passage. Now, notice with me Luke chapter 22. So let's see what Jesus said about self-defense. Luke 22, verses 35 and following. So if you can control the situation by shooting the gun out of his hand, you can control the situation. If you have enough, you know, big sons to take him down, tie him up, then call 911. Again, dial a prayer. Luke 22, verse 35. And he said unto them, when I sent you without purse and scrip and shoes, lacked ye anything? Now, we have to look at this culturally here. The disciples are carrying purses. Did you notice that? All right, so let's keep it in perspective. This would be like a backpack, man. Or probably a side pouch or whatever. All right, so when I sent you without purse and scrip and shoes, lacked ye anything? And they said nothing. Then said he unto them, but now, notice he makes a contrast here. That was before, but now. He that hath a purse, let him take it, and likewise his scrip. And he that hath no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. Notice it's going to be important to have a sword on hand. For I say unto you, that this that is written must yet be accomplished in me. And he was reckoned among the transgressors, for the things concerning me have an end. And notice their response. Lord, behold, here are two swords. Now, I want you to notice, first of all, the sword was not used for crusades against those who disagreed with you. The Roman Catholic Church took up swords to force people to believe the way they wanted them to believe. Notice, it's not for an offensive attack. Here are two swords. And notice what he says. He said unto them, it is enough. Now, let me ask you, how many disciples are there left at this point? 11, right? Two swords were enough for 11 men. Jesus is not emphasizing here, yeah, I want all of you to have a sword. No, it's not necessary for everyone to be well armed. But here's the point. Two would be enough. Why is this the case? Because probably, more than likely, the Bible doesn't clearly say, but probably because at night, they're heading from where they observed the Passover, they're heading out to the Mount of Olives, and it was dangerous to be out in Jerusalem at night. And so he's saying, have a couple swords, and that would be enough to deter an attack. In fact, what I think is interesting, Paul never talks about having a sword when he's attacked, when he's wandering from place to place, perils of robbers and so on. So I want you to notice that again. Notice then drop down to verse 47. So while he has spake, right? So here's the armies coming in and so on. This is after Jesus has prayed. My Father, thy will be done, not mine. Verse 47. And while he yet spake, behold, a multitude, and he that was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near unto Jesus to kiss him. This is a common greeting in that culture, but this is a betrayal kiss, not a saluting greeting kiss. I'm glad our culture doesn't kiss men on each other's cheeks. It's like, anyway, you need some beard balm, right? Verse 48, Jesus said unto him, Judas, betrayest thou the Son of Man with a kiss? When they which were about him saw what would follow, notice they said unto him, Lord, shall we smite with a sword? Remember, we have these two swords with us. Okay, notice in verse 47, multitude. And we see in other places they have swords and staves and all that kind of stuff. So shall we take on this whole army with two swords, Lord? why don't you stop and think about what you just asked there? And one of them, Peter says, I'm going to take matters in my own hand. One of them smote the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. Now, I believe Malchus was ducking otherwise he would have taken off his head. I believe Malchus probably was ducking the sword. I mean, this is at night, and we're swinging swords around, Peter. So that's why it cut off his ear. Of course, it says Jesus touched his ear, healed him, put his ear back on the side of his head. Now, I think that would get Malchus's attention. And then Jesus said unto the chief priests and captains of the temple and the elders which were come to him, be ye come out as against a thief with swords and staves? When I was daily with you in the temple, ye stretched forth no hands against me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness. Elsewhere he says, put up thy sword. I believe that's in Matthew 26. Put up thy sword, they that live by the sword will die by the sword. Notice John chapter 18. John chapter 18. Here's why I want you to see that this is not an offensive statement that Jesus is making. John chapter 18, verse 33. And Pilate entered the judgment hall again and called Jesus and said unto him, Art thou the King of the Jews? Jesus answered him, Sayest thou this thing of thyself, or did others tell it thee of me? Pilate answered, Am I a Jew? Thine own nation and the chief priests have delivered thee unto me. What hast thou done? Notice what Jesus says here very carefully in verse 36. Jesus answered, My kingdom is not of this world. This is a spiritual kingdom, that is establishing. He did not come the first time. I've said this so many times. He did not come the first time to establish an earthly kingdom. If my kingdom were of this world, notice this, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence. When Jesus comes back, he's going to have a sword out of his mouth. He's going to destroy the adversaries with the sword of his mouth. He's going to speak their death. When he comes as a conquering king, they're going to know that there's a judge coming. But notice he says, now, my kingdom is not of this world now. Notice, if my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight? They would all have swords that I would not be, should not be delivered unto the Jews. I want you to go back, though, to verses 10 and 11. John chapter 18, verses 10 and 11. This is the other statement. I want for us to see this in contrast here. Verse 10, Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and smote the high priest's servant, cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Obviously, John knew who this Malchus was. Then said Jesus unto Peter, Put up thy sword into the sheath. The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it? Again, I want you to notice here in this context, Jesus says, Put away your sword, Peter. And that's why in Matthew 26, he also says, The one who lives by the sword shall die by the sword. Now, I want to point out here, first of all, self-defense is a reactionary to a threat. Self-defense is reactionary to a threat. Revenge is premeditated. That's why I want for us to see the contrast here. I want you to consider what Jesus is saying here in these passages. It's not to teach someone a lesson. I'm going to shoot them because I'm going to teach them a lesson. In fact, there's an article discussion that I came across between Jerry Falwell Jr. and another college pastor president, as they had a disagreement about this, because Jerry Falwell, evidently from the pulpit of Liberty University, said, I have something in my pocket, and all of you are going to be allowed to get your own license. We have our own license training here on campus and everything. But here's the statement that bothered a lot of people. If they come here, we're going to teach them a lesson. I'm sorry, that's not found in the Second Amendment. That's a misapplication of the Second Amendment. A sword, gun, whatever, is not to teach somebody a lesson. Also, it's not for crusades and offensive attacks, as I've already mentioned. Now, I want to point out here, as far as our military. Our national military should be for a defense, not tyranny all over the world. Let me read it again. Second Amendment. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I want for us to consider a standing army that we have that's all over the world, literally, is not according to our Constitution. If our military was truly right, it would be here protecting our borders instead of allowing our government to flood over the borders. Psalm 20, verse 7 says, Some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we will remember the name of the Lord our God. Their trust is in God. Now, I want to, as far as a couple of examples, as far as self-defense and protection and all that. 1 Samuel 30, we have David and his men rescuing their families from the Amalekites. Let me remind you that they attacked the Amalekites. They didn't kill all of them, but they attacked the Amalekites because they had their women, their wives, and their children, and in addition to that, all their possessions. Also, I think of Genesis 14, where it says Abram rescued Lot and his family from Chedorlaomer and the other kings that came and raided Sodom and Gomorrah. I want to emphasize again, no revenge for insults. Notice with me Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 and 39. The Bible does not permit revenge for an insult received. I'm going to teach them a lesson. Well, I'm sorry, you're going to end up being a murderer then in that case. Notice it says here in Matthew 5, verses 38 and 39. You've heard that it has been said, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. Now, James, I want you to think. Stand up here, James, so that everybody can see this here. So if I'm striking James with my right hand, sorry, Brother Carl, but the Bible does not speak very highly in most cases for a left-handed. Most people would strike with their right hand. Now, in your favor, I see the Benjamites. I mean, they were left-handed. They could shoot on a hair's breadth. All right. So if I'm striking with my right fist, what side of his face is it going to hit? Left side. But notice what it says here. Which side, which cheek are we striking? The right side. Smack. So this would be a backhanded insult. Notice, thank you, James. Notice, I do not have a right if that takes place for me. Somebody insults me. All right, I'm going to teach you a lesson. I would be guilty of murder then. Notice what Jesus says. I say unto you that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. Oh, you want to hit my left cheek? Go ahead. There is no resistance for an insult. I think of the example of David in 1 Samuel 25. Remember when David sends messengers to get from Nabal his pay? Because they had protected Nabal's shearers? Well, they shaved half their beards off and sent them back home and insulted. Well, actually, no, in that case, they were just insulted. And so they arrived back with the message for David. So everyone gird their swords up. We're going to go teach Nabal a lesson. Abigail had to meet him. Oh, please don't do this. You're going to bring a bad name upon thyself. I know you're going to be king someday. So literally. Yeah, there was that Hanan one that... Yeah, they did go out and fight that. But anyway, but here's he's going out to teach Nabal a lesson because that fool insulted me. David would have been wrong, absolutely wrong, to take a sword to settle an insult. Again, we have to remember this. Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12. I think of Joab. Joab actually lost his life under Solomon. Joab, in many cases, resorted to a sword to deal with his problems. He did not like Abner killing his brother when his brother actually provoked it. So he killed Abner with a sword. I think Abishai is the other one I mentioned. But I want you to notice this. Joab resorted to a sword to right wrongs. Notice it says in Romans 12, verses 17 through 21. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. It's to melt, not to burn, by the way. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. I want to just show you an example here that Jesus dealt with. Notice with me Luke chapter 9. Now, it's interesting. In the listing of the disciples, in Mark 3:17, talks about James and John being the son of Boanerges. Jesus nicknamed them Boanerges. Sons of Thunder. I believe this is a reference here that shows what James and John originally were like. They were ready to take arms to, they're going to destroy. It says in Luke 9, verse 51. It came to pass when the time was come that he should be received up, he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. And notice, he sent messengers before his face, and they went and entered into a village of the Samaritans to make ready for him. Remember, just like many cases, we have evangelists today who will send a team ahead. This is what Jesus did. He would send a team ahead of him. It says, in fact, that's what Paul would often do with Titus and Timothy and some of them. They would actually stay behind to finish up things that the Apostle Paul organized. It says verse 53, and they did not receive him. All right, so the people of the Samaritans did not receive him because his face was as though he would go to Jerusalem. Well, you know, he's focused on Jerusalem. He doesn't care about us anymore. And when his disciples, James and John, saw this, notice they said, Lord, wilt thou that we command fire, you sons of thunder, Boanerges, wilt thou that we command fire to come down from heaven and consume them, even as Elias did? But he turned and rebuked them and said, notice, you know not what manner of spirit ye are of. For the Son of Man has not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And they went to another village. Notice, they were rebuked by the Lord for taking matters in their own hands. They're going to settle matters. Now, what's very interesting is in Acts 22 and a couple places in Acts, Paul appeals to the government authority based on law. He does not take up arms. What I think is interesting also in Daniel 3 and 6, there's no resistance. Acts 7, Stephen had no resistance. But here's the key for all of this. The key is to not trust a weapon, but to trust the Lord. Psalm 44. It's a very interesting statement made here in relation to that. So where is our trust? I am not saying that it's wrong to have a sword, a weapon. It's been a while since I mentioned this. We had a pastor friend, and he would send us out emails every once in a while and to all of his preacher buddies and stuff. So I received this email one time, and he said, attached is a photo of what we need when they come for our guns. And it shows this nail gun, and it looks like an AR-15 or something. It's like, here's what you need when they come and take away our guns. This is not a gun. This is a nail gun. Notice Psalm 44, verses 6 through 8. For I will not trust in my bow. Notice this. I will not trust in my bow, neither shall my sword save me. But thou hast saved us from our enemies, and hast put them to shame that hated us. In God we boast all the day long, and praise thy name forever. Selah. Now, what is it in the Revolutionary War? Trust God to keep your gun, your gunpowder dry, right? So that's the balance. Now, I want to give you a few case studies just to keep this in mind here, just to bring application. So that you understand, now that I've had my disclaimers and so on. In fact, David said to Goliath in 1 Samuel 17:47, the Lord saveth not with sword and spear. I come to you in the name of the Lord. Now, so somebody breaks into your home and endangers you and your family. First of all, first case scenario here. So they try to kill me personally. That's self-defense. Now, again, I want to emphasize, it should not be automatically assumed, I'm going to kill them. I'm going to protect myself. There's a big difference there. For example, if that person is unsaved, they're automatically on their way to hell. If my goal is to kill them. And let me just say it this way. This revenge mentality, I believe, was seen in regard to Iraq and all of those kinds of things. I heard of preachers. I don't remember hearing a preacher say this, but I heard of preachers who say, kill them, the Muslims! Okay, you're a preacher of the gospel, and you want to make sure that all Muslims go to hell. That's the only way you could read that. Kill all those Muslims! No, there's a problem with that mentality, and it's sometimes in pulpits. So if somebody tries to kill me personally, that's self-defense. I'm not trying to kill them, but I am trying to protect myself. Second case scenario, somebody tries to kill my wife or a neighbor. In that case, I'm protecting my family. I'm acting as a private citizen. Third, now here's what's very interesting. If a murderer escapes, and I see him weeks or months later, if I kill him at that point, I am now a murderer. Because my response should have been to contact the proper authorities. Notice Romans chapter 13. Romans chapter 13. It is never right for us to take the law into our own hands. Romans chapter 13, notice verse 1. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. That's a good government anyway. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. Again, this is a test to determine with whether it's a wicked government or a good government. Notice verse 4. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Now, I'll just give you an illustration of this. It wasn't as far as murder. But when I was a custodian at the high school that I graduated from in Abilene, Texas, there was one time I came out of the fine arts building where the band and all that was, you know, art rooms and everything were. So I came out of the hallway, and I noticed that there were a bunch of police covering the campus. We had separate buildings as far as different, you know, this is Texas. You didn't have to walk in warm hallways and stuff. Got pretty cold sometimes across there, though, but in Abilene. But as I'm walking out of this building, all of a sudden I have a couple police officers walk up to me. And it's like, whoa, what's going on here? He says, you just came out of that building. Where were you? I said, well, I'm a custodian here. It's my keys, even. I'm a custodian here, and I said I was just cleaning the band room or something. I don't remember where I was at, cleaning classrooms. I was heading to the library. Well, they detained me for a moment until they determined from the little girl, the girl that had been walking across campus, somebody had exposed himself in a wicked situation. So they were looking for this guy. He'd been walking across campus and everything. And what happened in one of the, is between the auditorium and the fine arts building is where this incident took place. Well, thankfully, he's not him. He's not the right one. Well, weeks later, I remember I was at the gym working out. I was lifting, getting ready for a powerlifting meet. Well, as I took my I had my own barbell. I didn't like any of this that they had, but I took it out to my car. Well, as I glanced towards the apartments, I saw this man that I had seen walking around campus before of the high school that I worked at. Well, thankfully that day, I walked in back into the gym, and there was a retired, or not retired, but off-duty police officer lifting weights that day. And I told him quickly about the situation. Yeah, I remember that situation. I said, well, I saw him over by the apartments. I stood there watching. He walks up to him, holds up his badge, and arrests him right then and there, and hauls him off as an off-duty police officer, hauls him off to the police department. It was not my duty to take matters in my own hands. I had to take care of that by way of the authorities. I want you to think about this. Our proper response is to contact the proper authorities, the God-ordained civil government. Genesis 9 talks about If blood be shed, by man shall his blood be shed. Notice me, 1 Peter chapter 2, as we finish up here. 1 Peter chapter 2. And let me just say this in relation to a tyrannical government. When our government starts promoting evil, then that's when the Second Amendment is supposed to come into effect. Notice it's 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13. Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man, for the Lord's sake, and again, as we've already seen in the Sunday school hour, except when they tell us to disobey God's law. Submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme or unto governors as unto them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers. Notice, for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of them that do well. Now, the last situation I want to emphasize here is this armed resistance. And as I've already been saying, it's to take law into our own hands is not right. It's wrong to start shooting tyrannical rulers as a private citizen. Again, we're talking about a collective thing. So for me to take out a president that I don't like, I am a murderer. Notice also, it's wrong to shoot an abortion doctor as a private citizen. Well, he's killing people. Then we need to deal with it through the proper channels of the law. I understand our law has been promoting abortion. That's because we have been silent and we've allowed our politicians to put into place a murder of an unborn child. The reality is it goes back to us, we the people.
Yeah.
We the people have not stood. And in fact, I remember several weeks ago, I came across this statement. I don't remember the exact wording. I don't have it in front of me. But basically he says, we have been copping out just by using elections to deal with our constitutional authority, our constitutional responsibilities. by voting on the lesser of two evils instead of dealing with what the Constitution says we are supposed to be doing. Collectively, as Americans, we are not standing up for what is right and what instead of what is wrong. We're tolerating what is wrong. Prophets of the Old Testament were acting in accordance to the law of God for Israel. Elijah took a sword and he killed the prophets of Baal. Samuel took a sword and killed Agag. That was according to God's orders, God's commands, according to Israel's laws. Now, I want to point out here, this is how I'm tying these two lessons together here, the morning and afternoon. In Acts 9, it says that Paul, instead of fighting back, it says he was lifted down by a wall and he escaped. You think about Acts 12. Peter did not organize all the Christians in Jerusalem that were still there. We're going to do an armed resistance to revenge the death of James. No, it says he fled. In fact, 1 Peter 5 says he probably ended up eventually in Babylon. Fleeing in persecution is a response that Jesus even said to do. Now, what I think is interesting, as an example of this, the missionaries in Ecuador, Nate Saint and all them, famous situation. They actually had guns for protection, but they did not use them. Think about this. They did not use them because they thought they were close to seeing the Alca Indians respond to the gospel. They thought they were close. So it's very interesting. In fact, there was all kinds of reasons why these Alca Indians decided, because they thought, they have these pictures and stuff. And it's like, whoa, they didn't understand what they were seeing. So it wasn't the gospel that they were killing them for. It was because they didn't understand photos and all those kinds of things. What was very interesting is those five missionaries did not protect themselves. They were speared to death. What is amazing about that is later on, many of those who killed the missionaries actually were saved as they heard the gospel. Here's the key. When it's because of what I believe, I will not fight back. In fact, if I fight back at that point, guess what? I have negated the message. I'm not saying that collectively we need to stand as a nation. We need to stand and say, no, you're not going to shut down churches. The problem is we did not have enough churches 3 years ago say, no, we're not shutting down. No, you find us all you want. We're not shutting down. Because after all, the First Amendment says, except in times of pandemic. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, like our city, requiring a permit, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Free exercise thereof. So 25 years plus, we freely were able to be in this town. Now we have to pay $20 a year. Something's changed there. Or abridging the freedom of speech or the press, or the right of people peaceably to assemble, limited to 10 in times of pandemic, and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Now, the problem is so many Christians have been silenced today that when the government tells us to disobey God, guess what? We're not speaking up anymore. Lord, I pray that you'd help us to understand these two issues in particular, the contrast that we emphasized, persecution and not fighting back, the matter of self-defense. Lord, I pray that you'd help us to understand these things biblically. I pray in Jesus' name, amen.